For those LGBT people who have grown up in the Islamic tradition, what psychological effect does it have on their well-being?
As a friend of mine who's an academic said, it's similar to being involved in a severe car accident where you have to go into rehabilitation to recover. So I thought, okay, how can I facilitate a platform where we can provide healing?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Day Against Queer Phobias strikes a global chord. Undercover Cameroon cops crash the capital's gay venues, and a gay imam makes peace with Islam. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 19, 2018. The annual International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia was observed around the world on May 17th with a wide variety of events. This year's theme was Alliances for Solidarity. Rainbow colors, from flags and balloons to building lights and artwork displays, characterized several observances in Australia. Exhibitions and panel discussions marked the day in Bolivia, Brazil, Croatia, Costa Rica, France, Honduras, Serbia, Sri Lanka, and the UK. Guatemalan activists held their sixth annual Walk Against Homophobia, while similar marches and rallies were held in Cuba, El Salvador, and South Africa. And in their observance of the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, the American Psychological Association counted some 125 bills targeting LGBTQ rights that have been introduced within the past year in the United States during a press briefing at the Rayburn House office building in Washington, D.C.
Uganda's ironically named Minister for Ethics and Integrity, Simon Lokoto, canceled an International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia observance in Kampala, literally minutes before it was scheduled to begin. Security forces ordered people to disperse because the event was illegally promoting homosexuality. Frank Mugisha of the organizing group Sexual Minorities Uganda said that it's very unfortunate that this kind of harassment continues to happen. In fact, it is the reason we organize such events.
Several dozen people demonstrated in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi to mark the day, defying an official government ban. Authorities feared violent clashes between LGBTQ activists and followers of the Georgian Orthodox Church, which had organized rallies for family purity on the same day. One queer action involved releasing smoking flares in an array of rainbow colors on a hilltop above the city, while in another, activists held up signs and chanted against homophobia outside the Prime Minister's office. There were minor scuffles throughout the day between churchgoers and queer rights supporters, but no major incidents were reported.
The organizer of an 8-day Pride Festival, scheduled for May 12th through 20th in Beirut, was forced to cancel most of the events, including a commemoration of the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, after Lebanese authorities threatened to prosecute him for immorality. Hadi Damian was arrested at one of the kickoff events, an Arabic language reading of a theater text about homophobia, and held overnight in an overcrowded cell before agreeing, on the advice of his attorney, to sign a pledge to cancel all remaining Pride events. Prosecutors wanted to charge him with organizing events considered to be inciting immorality and disturbance of public morals.
A video posted to China's popular Twitter-like social media website Weibo shows Beijing security forces assaulting a small group of activists commemorating the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia by trying to hand out rainbow badges in the city's hip arts district. Two women are seen being attacked by police officers, and one is knocked to the ground. Organizers said both women had to be hospitalized. Weibo subsequently removed the video without explanation. China was also banned this week from continuing to broadcast the globally popular Eurovision Song Contest, a particular queer fan favorite, after officials censored a performance by an entry from Ireland that featured two male dancers and rainbow flags.
25 men were arrested this week during raids on gay venues in Cameroon's capital city of Yaoundé. Same-gender sex is illegal in the Central African nation, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. In one raid, police officers posing as customers broke down the door of a popular night spot after staff told them that the place was closed. 7 people, including a waiter, dancer, and security guard, were among the detainees. 18 more were arrested at a movie theater known to be a favorite queer hangout. Police Commander Parfait Nana told local media that 2 people had been released because they were witnesses. The remaining 23 will be interrogated, he said, and conclusions will be reached at the close of the investigations. According to some reports, the torturous interrogation that continued over a 2-day period included being denied food and water, or worse. All of the remaining 23 detainees were released soon thereafter without charge or explanation. One of them told reporters that, "Despite threats by the police, we kept our cool. We were brutalized," he said, "and then we were released."
Russia's Justice Minister Alexander Konovalov told representatives from the United Nations Human Rights Council this week that there are no LGBT people in the country's mostly Muslim region of Chechnya. Therefore, he claimed, there could not have been the alleged purge of such people reported in recent months. A spokesperson for Chechen strongman and Vladimir Putin ally Ramzan Kadyrov had already told reporters that you cannot arrest or repress people who just don't exist in the republic. Konovalov told a working group of the UN's Human Rights Council that his office had taken the allegations seriously and looked into them. As for gay people in Chechnya, he said, we weren't able to find any. Those statements fly in the face of numerous reputable media accounts of LGBT Chechens being rounded up, placed in secret detention camps, and tortured until they revealed the names of everyone they knew. Several deaths during detention were reported. Belgium, Canada, France, and Germany are among the countries that have already granted asylum to fearful sexual minorities fleeing Chechnya. Russian officials have tried to counter concerns expressed in a number of other countries about the treatment of queer fans attending the FIFA World Cup matches this June in Moscow by saying that they have nothing to fear.
Updating a story we've been following for the past several weeks, Hong Kong's immigration department has quietly started to issue spousal visas to the foreign partners of legally wed same-gender couples, just as they automatically do for heterosexual couples. At the same time, the department is challenging a court of appeal ruling, ordering it to issue a spousal visa to the British wife of a lesbian who had moved to Hong Kong for work. A hearing in the city's Court of Final Appeal is scheduled for June 4th. According to a report this week in Pink News, the department calls the spousal visas it's now issuing to the partners of legally wed same-gender couples out of policy until the courtroom battles are resolved. The visas grant resident status, a national ID card, and access to educational and employment opportunities. If the Immigration Department wins its appeal, the foreign same-gender spouses of Hong Kong residents will again only be able to get extended tourist visas to stay in the city.
In other news, U.S. President Donald Trump continues to wreak havoc on LGBT rights advances made by the Obama administration. Trump's latest policy reversal says that biological sex should be the main determining factor on where to house transgender prison inmates, presumably forcing vulnerable transgender women to share cells with men. However, the Bureau of Prisons couldn't tell BuzzFeed News this week how biological sex is being defined, nor how officials would, in fact, decide who is transgender and who isn't. According to the online news site, a representative from the Bureau first said that they would look into the question, but followed up the following day with, "We decline to comment further." And no one will say if current transgender inmates will be transferred to other prisons because of the new policy. ACLU attorney Chase Strangio, who's represented transgender prisoners, said that while determining someone's biological sex might seem obvious, it is anything but. He pointed out that it could be defined by a person's birth certificate, chromosomes, anatomy, or other factors. The new policy also fails to address where intersex inmates would be housed.
In better news for the U.S. trans community, Vermont's Republican Governor Phil Scott signed a bill into law this week requiring all single-user public bathrooms in the state to be explicitly gender-neutral. The landmark measure affects bathrooms in government buildings, shops, schools, and recreational facilities. In his signing statement, Scott wrote that, "This is especially important for kids in school who face anxiety and bullying over something as simple as using the restroom." But a transgender rights bill was killed this week in the Republican-controlled New York State Senate. And according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, lawmakers in 13 states so far this year have considered bills to limit access to public bathrooms in some way.
And finally, from her public heterosexual persona and character on Sex and the City to saying she's bisexual, Cynthia Nixon has now come full circle as she challenges from the left sitting Democratic New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's seeking another term. The fledgling candidate floated a new campaign slogan during her recent appearance at the annual Legislative Correspondents Association dinner in Albany.
Vote for the homo, not for the Cuomo.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending May 19th, 2018. Written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazor, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the newly renovated thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Yeader.
And I'm John Dyer V.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
What does the Quran say about homosexuality in the original translation?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. The term is non-existent.
How can Islam and homosexuality be compatible?
I am Muslim. I am a gay man. I'm a father. I'm a lover. I'm a person of color. You know, we cannot put this human identity in a binary code.
Imam Noor Warsami shared those words of wisdom on the last This Way Out. The gay Melbourne, Australia-based cleric now goes on to talk about healing the effects of religious violence in all faiths and about some hopeful developments in the Muslim community. He spoke in a Sydney park during this year's Mardi Gras with our correspondent, Barry McKay.
For those LGBT people who have grown up in the Islamic tradition, what psychological effect does it have on their well-being and psychological health to be told this conservative viewpoint? What internal conflicts do they face?
As a friend of mine who's an academic said that when a child is natural emotions, you know, we even in different parts of the world, we haven't been taught emotional literacy. So I remember when I was growing up, you know, men don't cry, you're told. So you're suppressing a natural human emotion. The trauma that that causes, and that's on an emotional level, on a spiritual level, to me it's in the same wavelength, it's the same weight. This academic refers, she says, it's similar to being involved in a severe car accident, where you have to go into rehabilitation and take months to recover. So it is, and sometimes you recover fully, sometimes you don't recover fully, but that trauma always stays with you. It's irreversible, the damage that that does. I have thankfully just found ways of managing it, but it's irreversible.
Is there any way of remedying this within the confines of the Islamic faith?
That's why we have started. When I started the group in November 2013, there was a vacuum in the support services, particularly of LGBTIQ queer Muslim youth. I mean, I started Marhaba for LGBT Muslim young people. Then we had Jewish members, because people have partners, you know, and they would bring their partners, and, you know, people that have been traumatized by their Catholic background. My ex-boyfriend of 10 years was a Catholic man who hated anything to do with the church. And it took me a long time even to understand that. So I thought, okay, how can I facilitate a platform where we can provide healing for the damage that has been done with this religious hierarchy, and also see if we can reconcile spirituality with sexuality and not let go of one to have the other. And it has been thankfully effective thus far.
For an LGBTIQ person who is listening to this program, struggling with their sexuality, who's grown up in the Islamic faith, what message would you have for them?
I say, you know, hang in there. There's an alternative. And, you know, reach out. See where there is avenues and reach out. Reach out for help. Don't just suppress it, because trauma that is suppressed will always manifest itself later on in different ways.
In your opinion, why did God or Allah make LGBTIQ people?
Why did God make black people? Why did God make Asian people, white people? You know, it is. And you know, there's a verse that comes to mind now that you asked that, Barry. You know, wa min ayatihi, and from the signs of God, wa ikhtilafu alsinatikum wa alwanikum, the different tongues that we speak, the different languages, the different dialects, the different colors that you see of humans. One person is white, one person is black, one person is Asian. One person is tall, one person is short. So these are different signs of God's creation. Like, you have all these different plants, different animals, different. So, but we can't say, you know, okay, if you want to be this, you have to be this. You cannot encompass something that God has himself created to live freely. You know, you can't put it in a bottle, so to speak.
But it is something that challenges patriarchy, which is the dominant, I guess, ideology around the world in many countries, not only in the Islamic world, but also in many other parts of the world too.
And that's why there is this violent reaction. Historically, it has existed. We went through these training workshops where we went through the stories of Sodom and Gomorrah. Some people that wanted to understand the texts. So we went through them. They said, oh, wow, we can't believe it's not even there, the term. And people will give you different ways of how they think. But the one thing I found was that it is a threat to patriarchy, the masculinity. What is, you know, my father, for example, would say, men don't go in the kitchen. You know, it's a woman's role. A friend of mine said, you know, when his wife wanted to get a job, he said, oh, but babe, who's going to cook the food? Who's going to look after the kids? So there's this gender and roles that we inherit somehow.
But those roles, I suppose, are starting to break down in the West. Yes. In the Islamic world, they're still quite rigid, would you say?
There are. We are going, though, through that change. You know, change doesn't happen in a lifetime. But there is a change happening. Last night, I was speaking at an event at Sydney University, the first Sydney Queer Muslim Symposium. And you should have seen, Barry, the number of people, academics, physicians. One of the physicians was a general practitioner in somewhere in Western Sydney, where it's predominantly Arab people there, Muslim people. But she said, you know, even in a professional setting, we feel gagged, you know, because we don't know how to address this. But there is a shift happening. There, people are coming out to find alternatives, you know. I said, the fact that you're here, it's for a change shift to happen, agents for change are needed. And, you know, it cannot be left to other people to do it.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
As with the Bible, is it a case of needing to read the Quran in the text of the times in which it was written, in terms of any passages that could be conceived as being anti-LGBTIQ?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a scripture that was revealed 6th century, 7th century, where Arabs used to bury their daughters alive out of shame. I have a daughter, I'm a father of a daughter. There's a verse that says, وَإِذَا بُشِّرَ أَحَدُهُمْ بِالْأُنْثَى, when one of them is told the good news of a female child, ظَلَّ وَجْهُهُ مُسْوَدًّا وَهُوَ كَظِيمٌ, his face will turn out of anger. And then his friends will make fun of him. Oh, look, he's got a daughter. So it was such a, bury them, take the child and go to the desert of Arabia, dig a hole and bury the child alive.
Out of shame.
And there's another verse, وَإِذَا الْمَوْءُودَةُ سُئِلَتْ بِأَيِّ ذَنْبٍ قُتِلَتْ, that day will come on the day of judgment when that child that was buried alive will ask God, what have I done to deserve this? It was such a society that he came to. For him to, within a period of 23 years, to have women allow them to have half inheritance of a man, I think to me, in 23-year period for such a society, was in itself revolutionary, from being buried alive to having some sort of rights in leadership and so forth. So it needs to be contextualized. The context of some of those verses, it was talking to that society, a society that, as I said, maniacal in their way of thinking. And sadly, 1,338-39 years later, some Muslims and some other religious denominations do that in the name of religion. Not necessarily physically, like it used to happen back then, but they would bury their child, you know, like what happens to the LGBT, queer young people, being condemned simply because they are not following a particular, you're not Muslim if you don't do this, or you have to get married, or, you know. And that's a form of burial because, you know, the effects that it has.
There are a lot of LGBTIQ people in the Islamic world who feel the pressure, I suppose, from society, from the family, to get married. And live a secret life, I suppose.
Well, you're talking with one. I was married. I fathered a daughter. And, you know, my ex-wife, she loved me, and I loved her. And I was told, you know, just get married, it will go away. Because at that time I was on young imam who thought I would, you know, I was on the board of Imams of Victoria, the youngest back then. I like to describe myself then like a young bull, you know. And I was fat back then. Thinking I'll change the world. But I was told, you know, get married. You know, this don't act on it. It will go away. And I lasted 1 year, and I never cheated on her, thank heavens. But I had a problem with that. I had a problem with other men. As a man who was an imam, I saw this happening on a large scale. I saw men that were married with children and would be leading double life. They'd go to gay saunas as they're driving taxi, and they would go into gay apps, and they would go home to the wife who's looking after the children and lead that double life. So I had a problem with that. Other thing I had a problem with is people letting go of their spirituality because they said, oh, you know, I've been kicked out of the mosque or out of the church or out of the temple because I'm gay. Or I said, well, no, who can dictate your soul to you? It's your soul. And so I thought, okay, how can I facilitate something in between.
Are there any signs in Muslim majority countries of the growing acceptance of LGBTIQ people in 2018, do you think?
Even if the acceptance is there, it wouldn't be publicized. But what I am fascinated about is not the acceptance of the hierarchy, because the old school of thought, this mentality that's very Wahhabi oriented, is controlling, you know. The Saudi government now coming across as if they are doing changes, but the leadership, and specifically the imams, the power that they have, is very tight on. And young people who want to live freely, who a lot of Saudi young people have been educated in the West, and they have this freedom, but they go back and they have to submit. But young people are finding ways. Interestingly, finding ways to be artistic, to be innovative, and to reclaim their spiritual and sexual identities.
Is there any opposition from the more conservative Islamic leadership in Australia?
You know, I think by me coming out, it was a big shock.
Yes?
For many of the imams. I am trained, as many as the other imams are. Memorize the Quran, alhamdulillah. So I think one of the reasons I haven't had any backlash from the leadership in particular is because they know I'm not one who will be easily intimidated, and I will rebut whatever they come up with. Mm-hmm. So I think that has been a privilege, and I'm not trying to knock on wood, but as they say. I said to the guys in Sydney here, no, don't be frightened. Don't let them frighten you. And if they come and say whatever, you know, theological arguments to put doubts in your mind, I said, I will counter that. You know, there is patriarchy and there's what I call gaytriarchy. There are well-established organizations. Like I said, I had experienced in Melbourne, established organizations who have gone through the same issues that I'm talking about and Muslims are going through 30 years ago, 40 years ago. However, it seems that we forget. The word for human in Arabic is insan. Insan is derived from the word nisyan, forgetful. And generally, when we get in a comfortable position, we forget, you know. So there is still a need, and I think established LGBT organizations globally should look for, you know, groups that are starting up. And if you look, you know, you will find people reaching out.
Are there movements in other countries around the world to establish LGBTIQ-friendly mosques, and how successful have they been?
I know Imam Lutovic, for example, who started the first LGBT-friendly mosque in France, Paris. Mohsen Hendricks is a man, I would suggest he is one of the first LGBT gay imams, 20-year activism. And he started Al Fitra organization, you know, and he has his own congregation where they conduct prayers. There's facilities for mosques and so forth. There is the one in Germany. There is the Inclusive Mosque in England, London. So there are places, and they have been very, very successful, very successful. So Australia, we are next.
Good. Yes. Finally, if anyone listening to this program would like to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
So my website, imamnur.com, imamnur.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Imam Noor.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
You can see the video of Barry Mackay's complete conversation with Imam Noor Warsami at the all-new thiswayout.org. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Michelle Yater and John Dyer V, with thanks to Brian DeShazer, and from Barry Mackay. Ryan Eno and David Byrne performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Plus. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Alicia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WDFH Ossining, New York, 3PVR Mill Park, Victoria, KCSB Santa Barbara, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.